Is it a giant sucking sound or just a deep sniff? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Boy, and once again, you surprised me with one of those openings, which means that I don't really know what's coming.
It's always good to keep people guessing a little bit.
But, well, that's true.
Well, and you know what? That's the kind of the theme that I want to talk about right now, because we finally have quit guessing. As you know, we've been talking about this on and off over the last few weeks as things are starting to warm up in the political realm about the various individuals who are throwing their hats in the ring for a chance to grab the brass ring of the hottest seat in the country, the seat that sits behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office of the White House. You know, funny thing, Chuck, we're only, 18 months out from a presidential election?
Gee, yeah.
you wouldn't imagine it from everything you're talking about. But,
nope.
But one of the things that has been on a lot of people's minds up until, well, today, we're, broadcasting this on Saturday, but recording it on a Thursday. And up until this Thursday, what had been on the minds of most pundits, pollsters, prognosticators, and other ne'er-do-wells was, will he or won't he?
Well, the answer was always he would, but we just didn't know when.
We just didn't really know when, and of course there were some, shall we say, abortive attempts to try to peg down when and where it was going to happen, but it finally happened. And what we're talking about is the former vice president and current candidate now, Joe Biden, has thrown his hat in the ring, folks. It's now official. He stopped playing footsie, playing fast and loose, like he did during the 2016 election, everybody was positive that Joe could be the nominee early on, and then Hillary decided to get in, and he kind of hum-hawed around and then chose not to get in. Well, now that Hillary has said that she's not getting into the 2020 race, along comes Papa Joe. And Biden has basically says that he's jumped in here because we are in a battle for the soul of our nation.
Oh, gosh.
Chuck, it's that malady affects both parties, it seems.
Because
I'm sure that you've heard, and I'm sure many of our listeners have heard, that old tired chestnut of a refrain that we hear almost every, 4 years at the very least, sometimes every 2 years, depending on how hot the state elections are.
Yeah.
But that whole old chestnut that...
May I?
Yes, you may.
This is the most important election in our lifetime.
And if we don't get this one right...
Then it's the end of the republic as we know it.
Yeah, that's right. The soul of the nation, as the Democrats call it. Yeah. We call it the battle for the republic. both parties do this. It's fairly sad. But again, you know, this is a situation where, you know, a lot of people, especially the DNC, Tom Perez, and their folks, and pollsters, and, well, even more especially, deep-pocketed Democratic donors, were kind of hanging a little bit in limbo to figure out whether or not Biden, who's been playing around the edges since January on this particular race. So here we are, we're almost at the end of April, and he finally pulls the trigger on getting into the race. Now, he is definitely in time, because...
Oh, yeah.
It was everybody's presumption that with a Hillary Clinton not getting into the race, that if Joe Biden jumped in, he would immediately rise to the front of the pack and be the guy to beat in a Democratic primary. And I saw, I think Drudge Report or something today ran this thing, shock poll. Biden starts off with a 5-point lead on Trump.
No, he doesn't.
Okay, so we're going to unpack that in a few minutes because you and I both know those are what I call bought numbers.
Yeah, of course.
Because the DNC or the Biden campaign paid for a poll to be crafted in just such a way that they could get the results they wanted the day they launched. Now, it's funny. This shock poll comes out on the exact day that Joe Biden launches his presidential campaign. Coincidence much?
Yeah. No. So, no, of course not.
Okay. But then again, so that's the reason why that little shock opening. Because for people like maybe old Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, all those people, Pete Buttigieg, Beto O'Rourke, did what just happen? Was it that giant sucking sound that Ross Perot used to talk about? Now, if you remember when Ross Perot jumped into the 92 election, it was a giant sucking sound, and the only ones who were hearing it were the Republicans as he siphoned away votes.
Yep.
Now the Democrats, these other contenders for the lead in the Democrat primary that I just named, and honestly, let's just be quite frank, they're the only ones who had the chance of being a leader in the Democratic primary, even though there are 19 people right now filed officially to run for president on the Democratic ticket. They were the ones who were really battling it out, and honestly, it was getting down to, it looked like it was going to be a straw man fight between basically three of them.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont,
quote,
who caucuses with the Democrats and runs as a Democrat. Funny how he gets away with that. He runs for a nomination from the Democratic Party, but he's registered as an independent in the state of Vermont. He's considered an independent in the Senate who caucuses with the Democrats.
Okay, I don't really, honestly.
It must be a Vermont thing.
No, he's not. He doesn't run in Vermont as an independent. He runs as a Democratic Socialist.
Oh, okay. Oh, Vermont's got one of those where you can have 52, Heinz 57 flavors of political affiliation.
He's called an independent in the House or in the Senate.
Because they don't want to use the term socialist.
They don't want to use the term socialist, so they label him an independent.
Well, they should just label him a Democrat because that's what the rest of them are anyway, almost to a man-jack. Now, I'll take partially back because there are two or three who have jumped into the presidential race who are not socialist in their outlook. But these are minor guys who are congressmen from various states who have thrown their hat in the ring because they're not happy with the hardcore leftist progressivism and the Green New Deal life of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, or they don't want Pocahontas in or other things, or they are scared of Bernie and his outright socialism. Just take a look at our neighbors to the south in Venezuela to find out how well socialism works as a governmental program.
Well, they supposedly have an answer for that, and the answers that I've seen are laughably naive.
Yeah, well, it's like if they had just had more socialism, they'd have been all right.
The basic bottom line is if they'd just done it right.
If they'd just done it right, everything would have been okay.
every communist regime gets that, well, gosh, they just did communism wrong. Oh, well, if we'd done it your way. Let's see, we've had a...
they'd only killed 4 million more people. They'd have had it right.
We've had Lenin, Stalin, then the oligarchs in Russia, Khrushchev, Brezhnev, Yuri Andropov, Chernenko.
Oh, my, yes. Who was before Putin?
Well, it was the guy with the... Why can't I remember?
Gorbachev. Yeah, the guy as Chuck's doing this mime with putting something on his forehead.
Yeah, the North. That's Rush always used to say he's got North America. He's got a birth stain.
I always thought it looked like North Korea myself. Yeah.
And then we've got in China, we had Mao and now, Deng Xiaoping and all these guys, the whole list. And then in
Pol Pot,
Vietnam, and Cambodia,
the Khmer Rouge,
various other regimes, we've had plenty of communists who have had plenty of chances to quote unquote do it right.
Right.
And what do you know? Every one of them has failed.
We all know how big of a vacation paradise Cuba was during Castro's regime.
Yeah,
so.
It was a tourist destination back in the day in the late 50s.
Yes, it was.
Mostly for gambling and moral turpitude, if you will, but nonetheless.
So, in other words, it was the Vegas of the South Caribbean.
The mob was set to put more money in it. There's a lot of talk about the reason that Kennedy got assassinated, and it had a lot to do with some shenanigans in Cuba, maybe with the mob, and we don't want to go into that. It's all nebulous conspiracy theory.
We'll leave
stuff.
That for another podcast. Sometime.
Right. That's another day. But the fact is that, there are some guys out there trying to be the voice of reason in the Democratic Party. The voice of reason is not going to prevail. I've already heard the news reports today, Barry, painting Biden as a quote-unquote moderate.
Well, if you look at that field that he's running in of those 19 Democrats.
That's right. It's relative.
My God, he's a conservative, but he's not a moderate. Let's get the story straight here. But that's the whole key. So they're trying to paint him as a centrist. They're trying to paint him as a voice of reason. They're trying to paint him as, yeah, he still wants socialism, but he wants it in the slow pace that the Democratic Party has had it going in up until the ascension of a Bernie Sanders and an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and I'm not even talking about the candidates. I'm talking about their elected officials. Rashida Tlaib,
Ilhan Omar.
We'll talk about her in a little bit because Schiff. That is a hotter mess every day.
Schiff, Swalwell.
You go down the Jerry Nadler. Pelosi,
Kristen Gillibrand,
Maxine Waters, Pocahontas, Pocahontas,
Hiawatha.
I like that one better. Hiawatha. So that's Elizabeth Warren. So all of these people, I mean, yes, they make Joe Biden look like almost like a caveman. But the other thing they also make him look like is old and white and male, which I don't think is playing with the new base of the Democratic Party so well.
It's not, but it plays with the center.
Yeah, well, it does play with the center, and that's where the money is.
Exactly.
Well, that's where the old money is in the Democratic Party. Now, the new money in the Democratic Party is all of your tech folks and your progressivists.
The ultra-left.
Guys who funded Beto O'Rourke to $6 million in the first 24 hours after he made his announcement, and who also funded Pete Buttigieg with a few million dollars after he made his announcement.
Okay. That brings us to a branch point that I would like to just take a little segue, if you don't mind.
Go run right out that limb.
Let's make a friendly bet on who's the first out.
If you want me to take your money, I will.
I think I know who the first out is.
Okay, I'll tell you. Okay, you announce who you think the first out is. I'll announce who I think the first out is, and then we'll see who's closest.
It's Warren.
Okay. All right. And your rationale.
It's Warren because basically she has so, if you want to put it this way, if you could put a torpedo through your own boat,
sure.
She's already done that. And in fact, basically what you see is the bow down and the flag, upside down waving in the wind as an SOS signal. She's done.
Okay.
And the other possibility, I have two possibilities.
Okay. Now hold on to your second possibility until I tell you who I think is going to be the first out.
Okay.
Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke.
That was my other possibility.
He is going to be the first one who's going to pull the cord and jump out. Why? His campaign is falling apart.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have any traction anymore because guess who actually sucked all the air out of the room for Beto? Pete Buttigieg. And Beto brings nothing to the table.
No.
For even to be on the VP candidate on a ticket.
He's an empty suit.
He's completely empty. He's in a red state, which they're not going to win because, hey, he just showed statewide he can't win.
Right.
When he ran against
Ted Cruz.
Thank you, Ted Cruz. My brain just shut down. I'm thinking about Democrats more than Republicans.
It's okay.
But he just showed he can't even win his own state. So what's that adding to the ticket? Absolutely a big goose egg zero. Young photogenic progressive. Oh, Pete Buttigieg checks all those off. Progressive pro-abort, pro-homosexual. Well, let's see. Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris. Check. Everybody else. What other thing is Beto got going against him? Two things. Number one, he's not African-American.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that in a racist sense. I'm saying that in a pure political sense. And number two, the Latino vote is breaking Republican, not Democrat. Yeah. So even the fact that he has Latin heritage.
No, he doesn't.
Well, supposedly he does. The Beto is supposed to be tying him to his
Latin American
roots.
You know where that came from?
Yeah.
It came from, he's from El Paso.
Uh-huh.
And he was a congressman from El Paso.
Yes, he was.
And basically, that's what his constituents nicknamed him, because he's Robert.
Yeah.
So he's Beto.
Yeah.
Because he's a friend, supposedly.
Well, he kind of plays that off that he can pull the Latin.
And he can speak Spanish, which is not shocking in West Texas.
Well, no, it's not. Well, it's not shocking because I'm sure Elizabeth Warren can speak some Spanish. I'm sure that Kamala Harris can speak some Spanish. Cory Booker, I'm not so sure he knows the word Spartacus in Spanish or not, but okay. Beto is my pick for the first horse not to even finish, much less get to the line.
Booker, though, is long-term.
Well, absolutely is.
Because he's running for VP.
Yeah, of course he is. Absolutely he's running
good.
For VP.
Our analysis isn't that far apart.
Now, okay, so Beto was your number two after Elizabeth.
It's going to be a close tie.
Actually, I'm not so sure because I think Warren is going to stay in for one reason and one reason only, cabinet appointment. If she drops out too early, she becomes part of the background noise.
Oh, yeah. She would like to be Secretary of Commerce or...
Yeah, HUD or any of those. But the point is, she's sitting in a state that the Democrats know that they have, but would like to not have to spend a lot of money to keep. She brings that to the table.
Yeah, I suppose.
But that's pretty much all. You're right. You know, she's torpedoing herself. But I think she's realizing that, yeah, there's holes in the boat. But as long as we can keep bailing for a while, the boat will go down slowly enough that I can send up an SOS and maybe the nominee who they just all assume are going to beat Donald Trump will hand me a plum for staying in and staying loyal and doing all that good stuff.
Bernie will stay in, but they won't have to cheat to kill him this time. He's done.
Actually, I'm just going to tell you flat out, my number two to leave is Bernie.
He's got 0% chance.
Bernie is killing himself right now.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of his comments are coming back to haunt him. This whole thing, he's losing a lot of those hardcore young millennial progressives who loved him in 2016, but are now starting to say, wait a minute, you're a multimillionaire. Oh, we hate millionaires.
He's a millionaire.
He's in trouble. He started a smoldering brush fire in his own back pocket.
Yes. Yeah. It's.
I would say Beto's first, Bernie second.
Okay. Here's one for you.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, former press secretary, CNN Simone Sanders just joined Joe Biden's campaign.
Thank you. Okay, let's just keep this rolling here. But again, that's my reason why I think Bernie's number two to be out the door.
Yeah.
And there's no him staying in. The only thing it does is creates chaos for the DNC, which means nobody's going to reward him with a cushy administration job should they take over the White House, because he will be the reason why they had to spend an extra $20 to $40 million in states that they didn't need to.
Where would they put him anyway?
Who knows? But the point is,
ambassador to Romania, maybe.
But the point is, it's never going to happen because Bernie burnt every bridge he could possibly burn. Feel the burn. Guess who's feeling it right now?
Yeah.
He is.
Yep.
Now, again, folks, you know, Chuck and I are making these prognostications as amateur politicos. So, we're not doing this from a professional aspect, and we certainly don't get paid to make these phone calls.
We have to pay to do it.
Yeah, we have to pay to do this. So, yeah, it's not like we're not getting paid to make these calls. But, I'm with you. I mean, but I think Warren's going to hold in there at least through the early primary states, because it's the only thing she can do in order to potentially create a pillow to land in if the Democrats happen to take the White House in 2020, which, let's all just be quite honest about it. Even if Joe Biden is their standard bearer, they're not going to get there.
No.
Donald Trump, I mean, and I don't know if you just if you saw this or not, and I hope that our listeners got to see it, and if they didn't, we'll pull it up and add it. This was over on Breitbart, but there's this lovely little article with a big picture, and it's got a little picture of John Kasich kind of in the insert with a bigger picture beside of him of former House Speaker John Boehner. And Boehner is basically suggesting to Kasich that he would be insane to jump in and try to challenge Trump.
I'll be quite honest. I think that's exact. Somebody's telling him, yes, don't do it. If you want any remnant of a political career after this, or you want to run for the Senate,
You better not do this. And you know what? And they're asking Boehner to deliver the message to him.
Yes.
That's exactly what's happening. Because guess who John Kasich grew up under in Congress?
Oh, yeah.
John Boehner. Boehner's kind of, without going directly to him, is going out there publicly to basically say, John, rethink this, because this is a suicide run for you. There is nobody he can hook up with, Chuck, that will end up taking Donald Trump out in the primary.
No.
William Weld's certainly not going to do it, although he has announced now that he's in.
He's official.
So Donald Trump officially, well, almost officially, he hasn't filed all the paperwork in all the states yet, but Donald Trump has semi-officially has a primary now in the Republican Party in 2020. We'll see how long that lasts. It'll probably last as long as William Weld's last run at president lasted, which was the second debate. By the third debate, he was gone.
I'll be quite honest. He may stay in a long time, and if he does, it's the last gasp of the rhinos.
Bill Kristol doesn't have enough money to keep William Weld in.
Romney, Huntsman, in fact, Abby Huntsman's out there.
None of whom are going to get behind Weld.
Trust
me. Okay, I want to tell you right now, Mitt Romney is not going to get behind William Weld. There's just no way. If Romney's going to get behind somebody, it's going to be somebody he can control.
Well, yeah. Remember, what's Kasich's dream team?
Oh, him and Hickenlooper.
John Hickenlooper.
Yeah, the Democrat ex-governor of Colorado, a state which is falling apart at the seams economically and socially.
Under his leadership.
Under John Hickenlooper's leadership, yes. How did we do here in Ohio under John Kasich's leadership? Well, we did a little better, but I think we started from a better position in the first place. But we still have yet to find out just exactly how bad John Kasich's policies have hurt the state of
Ohio.
We
already know he left us with billions
in unsecured debt.
We've known that since like the beginning of his first term.
Yeah, and it's called Medicaid expansion. That's the main part of it.
Yeah.
But then there was why are we raising the gas tax here in July, Chuck? Because John Kasich spent an awful lot of money, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, on stupid little projects like smart roads and driverless semis to basically throw bones back at big campaign contributing companies that had thrown money to him for his presidential run. I'm sorry, Chuck, but the whole idea of a 60-foot 70,000-pound loaded semi truck and trailer being on the highways of this state with nobody behind the wheel is not a scenario I want to be out on the roads on, nor do I want my children, who are just getting their driver's permits and licenses, to ever have to experience.
Well, let's be clear about what John Kasich's ulterior motive is. And as usual with John Kasich, there's always an ulterior motive. Good riddance to bad rubbish on that account. He wanted to embed sensors in roadways. Why? So he could go with what the Northwest is doing and begin to charge Ohioans not on the basis of per gallon of gasoline, but on the basis of how many miles driven. Mm-hmm. And now, why are they doing that? Well, guess what? A lot of people are going to hybrids. And a lot of people are, some people, not tons, but some people are going to electric cars. What happens when you drive a hybrid? Let's take my truck, which gets about 15 miles to a gallon. And let's suddenly make it a hybrid with an electric motor, and the engine kicks in when the battery gets low or when I have to climb a hill or whatever. what would that do to the that 16 miles in a gallon that I might get on 15 miles to the gallon I might get on that truck? Well, all of a sudden, it'll take 15 miles a gallon, make it 35.
Mm-hmm.
Make it 35 or 40. Well, guess what? That means you're selling less gasoline.
That's true.
Well, when you're selling less gasoline, you're raising less revenue. What do we have to do? We have to charge per mile driven, which means that little device that your mechanic uses to read your PCM, your computer in your car to see where the misfire codes and all that stuff is, you'll be required to have one of those with a transponder in it. And it'll connect with those embedded things. And in your mileage will be monitored where you were. They can even tell how fast you're going with how often you pass a transponder, if they know the distance between the transponders. This is essentially 1984.
It is.
It's backdoor 1984.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sick of the whole idea because, you know, you're right, because that's exactly what they're going to do is, like, between the two transponders, then you'll automatically get, like...
You'll get a ticket in the mail.
Speeding tickets or whatever, and, of course, you won't be able to challenge them because who's to challenge?
Well, the whole thing, most of those through-the-mail tickets...
Mm-hmm.
Are run by private companies.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is a nightmare. The way they demand it be done, and the state law reads that they can. When you ticket, like, for instance, a red light camera, you have to pay the fine and then go to court.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, no, we're going to go to court and see if I have to pay the fine. I would not pay that. And I know what the first thing, have you paid it? Nope. Why not? Because it's unconstitutional, first of all, and we're way off on a tangent on this because we were talking about presidential candidates, but this is the kind of thing that guys like John Kasich, who want to be president, think is quote unquote progressive.
Yep, that's true.
Now this is what they mean when they say progressive. You know, Joe Biden says, "Why are you calling yourself a moderate?" And he says, "Because progressive has become socialist." Well, progressive always was socialist. I'm sorry. If you know anything about the socialists or about progressives, they're all socialists, and that includes Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Bull Moose Party was a progressive party.
Exactly. And the fact is that Joe Biden has come out and declared himself the most progressive candidate in the race, and I have to laugh. I go, dude, you've got some stiff competition in that arena.
I was going to say, I think maybe he meant regressive, but okay, yeah, you know, he slipped. It happens.
Because, you know, we're sitting here talking about progressivism as if that's a positive term. It's sort of like when we teach a Constitution class,
mm-hmm.
we talk about negative law and how negative law is a great thing and positive law is awful. And people are like, but it's positive law. And I go, okay, let's talk about what positive law is. Positive law means you have a constitution, let's say, in a republic like Russians. And it's positive law means all power lies with the state, but you may do the following things and you'll get a list. That's a positive list of the things that you're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's positive law. In other words, everything is restricted except what the government tells you you can do.
Yes.
And we're moving in that direction.
Yep.
But negative law says... all things are permissible.
Unless it's prohibited.
Unless it's prohibited.
Unless it's specifically prohibited.
And
yeah.
here's the short list, and it is a short list. That's negative law, and that's why negative law is the law of liberty.
And for those who are not sure where that list is, it's called the Constitution
that's
of the United
right.
States. That it's a negative law document.
And guess where most of the restrictions in the Constitution are against?
It's against the government itself.
It's against the government. Restricting government power.
Yep.
And it's been twisted by judges and whatnot who are positive law advocates to say, oh, well, that's not really what the founding fathers meant. Without actually referring to any of the documentation about what they did mean, which is voluminous, they will rely on judges further back their decisions and twist those words. That's progressivism at its core.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And again, you know, I think that the bulk of the American electorate is not in favor of this progressive, you know, radical change. Because you think about it, we had 8 years of progressivism under Barack Obama. It was a soft progressivism because I think they were hesitant and afraid of pushing too much too far in the progressive agenda. But the problem is that now that Obama has left, the hardcore progressives in the party look at him as a traitor. And that's the reason why you have the rises of, again, I'll mention the names, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Maxine Waters is now, even though she's older, she's coming out hardcore progressive. And honestly, it's why you got a Tulsi Gabbard.
Yes.
You know, and Tulsi Gabbard is the most unconventional progressive I think I've ever seen, which is the reason why I think, you and I talked about this privately, I think she will make probably the VP slot on the ticket, whoever's ticket it might be, because she's bringing so much to the table of reaching out to those who are not just the hardcore leftist progressives, but still being able to reach out to the hardcore leftist progressives, because she's almost as progressive as Bernie is in the social areas. Where she's not progressive as much is her background as a military officer, as a business owner. You go down the list.
She's attractive.
She's the Sarah Palin of the Democratic Party for 2020.
Yeah.
And honestly, yes, I'm not saying she's exactly on the same par with Sarah Palin as far as policy and beliefs go.
Oh, no.
I mean, she's almost exactly the opposite of that. But just like you and I talked about back during that race in 2008. We all had lunch together and we're all talking about this very people. I said, hey, guys, there's somebody you ought to pay attention to.
I remember
it's this governor up in Alaska. Her name's Sarah Palin.
Well, we knew something about her because her husband
was in the Constitution Party.
Constitution Party at the same time
we were. That's right.
As the Alaska Independence Party. That was an affiliate of the Constitution Party.
Yeah, absolutely was.
And Todd was the chairman.
I think we might have met him of the National Committee meetings.
We might have. Wouldn't shock me.
But again, some of those National Committee meetings, we were busy trying to fend off some wolves.
Oh, gosh.
And we really didn't have time to like make too many friends. Well, we did make friends, but we didn't have time to make the ones we wanted.
We had the wrong friends, according to the party leadership.
But, well, anyhow, that's water way under the bridge.
You know what Tulsi Gabbard also has going for her?
There are a number of different ways you can
fill
that in.
She's a Hindu.
Which
means it would be a quote-unquote diverse ticket. It's the diversity of the ticket. So she's a military veteran. She's got business experience. She's attractive. She's a Hindu. She's from a state that... it's not going to yank a whole lot of electoral votes, but it's a guarantee state, which is why they might keep her in a back pocket. Hawaii's a guaranteed Democratic state.
Yeah, it is. It is. But again, just like Alaska is not a fertile field for electoral votes, it was a fertile field for. Oh, we got somebody who balances the ticket out in so many ways against our candidate. Tulsi Gabbard can balance a ticket out with a number. Now, the three that you couldn't put her on the ticket with: Kirsten Gillibrand.
Oh yeah.
Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren.
No. Yeah.
Can't do it.
That wouldn't work.
Can't do it. Wouldn't work. It would just be oil and water.
Yeah.
But you put let's say it's Pete Buttigieg. You put Tulsi Gabbard on that ticket, they'll garner a lot of votes.
I think so, yeah.
Let's say it's Joe. You put Tulsi Gabbard on that ticket, you got youth, you've got a female. But then that's where, instead of that giant sucking sound you hear in the room, you have that deep sniff that starts happening. When everybody starts seeing Joe Biden with a female candidate, everything starts coming back out about creepy Uncle Joe and his, latent tendencies to want to basically perv on every woman he gets near, no matter if there are cameras there or not. And I think that's part of the reason why I don't think Joe Biden's going to be their nominee, Chuck.
Oh, I think the long knives. Remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about the long knives? Though they're going to be out for Joe, because let's face it, he's the natural front runner. they need to be rid of him. It's almost like Snow White and the 18 Dwarves.
Yeah, true.
The 18 Dwarves really got to make sure that Snow White's out of the picture, or none of them.
They're looking for like a Tom Perez at the DNC to be the witch bringing the apple, Sleeping Beauty thing. Witch brings the apple to get rid of her.
Yeah,
I'm mixing up my Disney princesses. I know, but hey.
It's okay. We it's all fairy tales, baby.
And that's exactly okay. Thank you for saying that.
Yes.
That's perfect segue. That's the reason why the Democrats are not going to win in 2020, because their entire platform is a fairy tale.
Oh, of course.
It is based upon how many freebies can we hand you, and people are starting to get wise to the idea that you, when you give somebody a freebie, you're taking the pay for that object or offer from somebody else. There is no such thing as a free lunch. So, folks, you know, I'm hoping that the American political electorate, by and large, is starting to come to the realization, and I think many of the youth are. Many of the younger people, not the core base, stupid nasties of the Democratic Party who you see on the campuses basically saying that even after a baby is delivered after a botched abortion, they're not a human being, so therefore you can let them die.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm segueing onto that, but I'm not going to segue into that. So
we've covered that.
We were covered that. But the point is that many young people, the millennial generation, are starting to realize there is no such thing as a free lunch. You can't have universal free college and free health care and free retirement and free minimum living wage. I forget which candidate was floating. Yeah, everybody should just be paid $2,000 a month, regardless of what they do or don't do, because we have basic wage for living that everybody should get.
Well, this is AOC's big program, and a couple of Elizabeth Warren was one of the ones who was batting that around, but she's batting around a whole bunch of stuff to see if she can catch fire again, which she may catch fire, but it's not the way she wants to. And also, Kamala Harris was sort of batting that one around a little bit.
Well, Kamala Harris is batting a lot of things around that are she's been floating a lot of trial balloons that have sunk like lead.
I was going to say that you really shouldn't play Hindenburg and take a flammable gas, put it inside of a flammable balloon, and paint it with aluminum paint, which is highly flammable, especially in a static discharge. What do you get?
Boom.
When you combine those things, boom. Yeah, that's what Harris has created herself. She's a gun confiscator supreme, but guess what? She carries one.
Well, you know, hypocrisy has never been a mortal flaw in the Democrat Party. They're full of hypocrisy. Okay, so I get that. But okay, fine. It's okay for her to carry a gun because, well, she's a member of Congress. She's female. She was in a job where she dealt with felons all the time. I mean, whatever excuse she wants to use, that's fine. But then don't turn around and be so high and mighty to say that nobody else deserves to be able to defend themselves that way. That's just rank hypocrisy. And honestly, with as many rapes on college campuses, as many sexual assaults as being reported, as much as the Me Too movement is moving forward, I'd say Harris's position is becoming somewhat antiquated.
Oh, we absolutely. What? Okay, look. The whole movement to get concealed carry legalized started where? Really? Florida,
yeah, when, that's true.
And that was during that spree where people were robbing tourists. They had,
yeah, that's right.
Tourist cars were readily recognizable because people would fly into Florida and they identified rental cars with a special license plate.
Uh-huh.
So what was happening? People were
just following the license plates and
just
then
following
robbing
the license
people,
plates.
Yeah.
And when people get lost, they'd head them off and rob them and kill them. Florida residents began demanding the right to defend themselves, and Florida became one of the first states. Believe it or not, Vermont was also And in fact, I think Vermont has what they call constitutional carry.
Constitutional carry. Yeah, Vermont style. We call it Vermont style concealed carry.
Which is basically carry until you do something and when we tell you you can't anymore. In other words, it's negative law.
It's negative law. Well, amazingly, coming from Vermont, it's negative law, which is very good. But again, you know, you've got so many of these candidates, and, you know, all it takes is I'm loving the fact that our, you know, political exercise for the 2020 election is starting so early, because the longer they're out there, the more they're going to say, and the more you can take it apart and say, well, that just doesn't work. Or, and the best question to ask one of these Democrats who starts handing out the freebies, who's paying for that? How are you going to pay for that? That has a price tag attached to it. Who's paying that?
Yeah, who's going to give you free tuition, free college tuition?
That's right. Who's paying it? Who paid for Obama phones? Who paid for Medicaid expansion? Oh, gee, everybody whose insurance rates went up.
They'll answer that. Well, we're going to tax corporations, and then the answer to that is how are they going to pay for the reduction in revenue?
Sure. Pass it on to the consumer.
They're going to raise prices. This is something that you can't get people, you can't follow really, and a lot of people can't follow past the second step. It's like you have to go back and back and back and back. But the fact is that I had a discussion with someone last night, and I don't think she was real happy with me, over a tax issue in a town in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, they want to raise the income tax from 1.5 to 2.5. And I said, for the purpose of fixing, quote unquote, fixing infrastructure.
Sure.
And I go, you know, 35 years ago, most towns, most cities, most large cities even, did not have income taxes.
No, they didn't.
And all of a sudden, they came in and said, 1%, we can do everything we want to do with 1%. Don't worry about it. We'll never raise it. And then the next thing you know, it's 1.25. Mm-hmm. Then it's 1.5. And then it's 2. And now they're going to 2.5. I said, look, you have to start thinking about these things. The amount of available income from any person is 100%.
True.
And the government, in all its forms and in all its taxes and hidden taxes and fees, is already grabbing somewhere in the vicinity of 50.
I'd say it's somewhere north of the vicinity of 50 at this point.
I'm being conservative.
When you start talking about licenses, fees, taxes, whether sales taxes, use taxes, property taxes, personal property taxes, inventory tax, VAT taxes, let's go down that list. VAT taxes. They'll come up, they'll have some new acronym for another tax here very soon. But again, most people don't get it, because what they do is weekly or biweekly or monthly, they get their stub from their paycheck, which many of them have direct deposited. They take a look at it, they see their net that they bring home, and they forget that net really isn't net anymore. Because once you take it in and use it, let's say you go to the grocery store.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say you go to the grocery store. And I know for my family, a week of groceries is about $200 because I got 3 growing teenagers.
Jenny and I spend $100.
But they're like, oh, but, you know, food isn't taxed. Well, some food isn't taxed, but it isn't just food you buy at the grocery store. You have to buy paper products. You have to buy
laundry
storage products. You have to buy your laundry products. And all that's taxed. Well, that comes out of your bottom line, and that's going back to a government. You go and buy a car. Oh, well, it's a $5,000 car. No, it's not. It's like a $6,200 car because of fees, licenses, and taxes.
Yeah.
And, what was it? Dealer prep or whatever. You know, we can only charge up to $50 for this thing. So guess what? It's $50 now we're charging because the government's letting us do
dealer
it.
Dealer prep. That's so they put their name on the back of the
car. Or something like that.
So you do rolling advertising.
That's for them making a phone call to order more of the forms from the government. So
no, there are all kinds of weird title tax.
I mean, every time you turn around, somebody's saying, you know what? We'll fix all the problems if you just give us more tax money. Okay, folks. All that has been done when you get the tax money is create new problems, because it isn't so much the problem or the tax, It's the people in between managing between point A and point B who are inept, who go out and do things like John Casey can spend it on smart roads and driverless trucks. And can you see how upset I am about that particular little and
boondoggle
radical
yes.
medical expansion, even going against your against the legislature and the people of the state and a constitutional amendment in the state, because you are playing God, your savior, and you know what's best for everybody. And if everybody just sits down, shuts up, and hands you their yep. wallet, you'll take care of all their problems. But you know what? It's engendered an entire, at least a couple of generations now, by generation, I mean the 40-year biblical generation.
Yeah.
A couple of generations now who basically say, yeah, government should take care of all of our problems.
Yeah.
Which is the reason why socialism is attractive to many of these people. Because
exactly.
What is socialism? You just sit back and let government take care of all this.
This is an important way of thinking about things, because I asked this person, I said, okay, so we know now that, let's say 35 years ago, cities got along just fine without an income tax. How all of a sudden can they not take care of the roads, and they have to threaten to fire police and fire to get you to vote for another tax issue?
They're too busy hiring psychologists
Bingo.
And social workers and they're, welfare checkers and everybody else, because our social safety net is made out of Swiss cheese and was always designed to be that way.
Exactly. I said they're wasting it on code enforcement.
Yes.
They're wasting it on making sure it's non-discrimination housing. They're wasting money on making sure that little old ladies don't rent the apartment over their garage to people who engage in perverted activity and they don't want it.
Or you're like Bill de Blasio and you're basically saying, hey, no more skyscrapers
no
built
more
with glass
buildings.
And steel. You know,
what he,
we're now green environmentalists, so you're going to have to build them out of paper mache and pixie sticks.
Yeah, what do you build a skyscraper out of? The Chicago
proved
that.
Obviously, you don't build anymore.
That's you know, the first skyscrapers were basically about 10 or 12 stories high.
Sure,
and they were very tall at the time.
Yes,
after the Chicago fire, that was the first city that. Well, why? Because masonry has a. An upper limit on how much weight can be supported.
That's right. How much weight it can
support.
So
what are you going to do now? You're warehousing people who don't. New York City is full of housing projects.
Mm-hmm.
They're multi-story. They're big. They're these gigantic edifices that are 10, 12, 15 stories high. What are you going to build them out of if you can't put glass and steel in them? This is a foot shooting. There was an old... There was an old graphic that was on one of the conservative websites once, and it was back when Joe Biden was first vice president. I mean, he couldn't keep his mouth shut, and he just said stupid things, which will come back out.
Yes, it will.
Especially when the 18 dwarves come out and try to stab Snow White.
I mentioned that Beto and Bernie both raised like $6 million in the first 24 hours of their announcing
yes,
their candidacy
exactly.
this year. That money's going to go for something.
That's right. So this graphic was basically Joe Biden bent over with a pistol in his hand, and he's got this big stupid grin on his face, and there's all these holes in his feet with this smoking pistol in his hand. So he's like been shooting himself in the foot over and over and over and over and over. That I mean, that's going to come out, and we know he can't keep his hands off women. It may be innocent.
Yeah.
It may be. That's right. Is it a giant sucking sound, or is it a big sniff?
Big, deep sniff. He's now been accused by multiple women of harassing them in a sexualized manner by putting his hands on them. And with one, he basically leaned up behind her, kissed her on the back of the head, and then took a big, deep smell of her hair.
Yeah.
And this is not his wife. He's married, okay? This is not his wife. And this was a woman he had just met that day. He was coming in to campaign for her. It was a woman who was running for Congress in New Mexico. Okay. And, of course, everybody in Ohio remembers the picture during the early campaign when Joe was planning on running for president the last time. And there's that picture at the diner down in Adams County.
Oh, yes.
I've been to that diner. I know exactly where it is, and I know exactly where he sat, where Joe Biden is sitting down at a booth with a big biker guy on one side, a big biker guy on the other side, and what would be colloquially referred to as a biker mama
sitting deeply
in Joe's lap while he's got his hands on her and like cuddled up to her, and they're both grinning and laughing at some probably off-collar joke he just told her, with the two guys looking kind of like glancing to the side, like, what is this guy doing with her?
Yep.
And that's a classic. And honestly, if that doesn't run in a half a dozen Democrat attack ads against him from the other candidates, they're missing an incredible opportunity. I'm just going to tell you that right now. But, okay, so this is Joe Biden. This is the guy who basically scared to death of a he thinks we're in a battle for the soul of the nation. So what is his problem with Donald Trump? I'm going to quote. This is quoting from NBC News, who did a big launch announce of Joe's candidacy. And they talked about it goes blah, blah, blah down through here. You know, they talked about Charlottesville and all this garbage. And he basically says that, you know, this whole thing with Charlottesville, he said, in that moment, I knew the threat to this nation was unlike any I'd seen in my lifetime, Biden said. Arguing that he believes, quote, history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time, unquote. And then here's the money cord, I think, for Trump. Quote, but if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation. Who we are, and I cannot stand by and watch that happen. Chuck, I have to say I agree completely with Joe Biden up until the last sentence he said. I do believe that if we give Donald Trump 8 years, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation back to where it was before. As his slogan says, make America great again, I think that's where we're heading to. I mean, this is the first tax year where people basically had the full impact of the tax reforms. How did your taxes look?
I haven't seen them yet. I had to file an extension.
No, well, I did too. I did too, but that's my problem on paperwork.
I can tell you this. My accountant said, don't worry, you're not paying anything this year.
Okay. Oh, so you're one of those free rider corporations that the Democrats hammer down on. Okay. And I'm standing here in his spacious corporate offices, overlooking the, I guess I'm overlooking your backyard here.
That's right.
Side yard or something. Yeah. Chuck's not living caviar, champagne dreams and caviar wishes here. I'll tell you that. But
I do have some champagne in the house.
Woo! All right.
From my daughter's wedding.
All right. Well, we're going to end this program a little early. No, just kidding. Just kidding. But the point is that Joe Biden may have inadvertently given Trump his campaign theme for the next election cycle. We will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation back to a country that's head can rise up again. Because right now, the character of our nation after 8 years of Barack Obama and the previous number of years of establishment machine politics, go along to get along politicians, there ain't a whole lot of pride left in this country. Donald Trump, warts and all, is bringing pride back to America. We're bringing manufacturing back to America. We're bringing small business back to America. And Chuck, I have to say it, even though I don't believe it's government's role to do this, by changing some of the policies of the Obama and previous administrations, Donald Trump is helping get government out of the way so morality can come back to America. I mean, you just every day I'm seeing stuff on my feeds from where we're taking this away from Planned Parenthood. We're going to rescind the Obama, you know, the Title IX gender equality transition bathroom issue. We are going after and we're going to negate. Now, this is a big issue for us because we're about ready to do something right now. The 4-H program has been invaded by the LGBT movement. And they're pushing transgender ideology into the 4-H clubs.
Okay.
With our tax dollars, Chuck, because remember, 4-H is a federally formed program, and it's funded through joint federal and state funding through cooperative extension services, which are run through state land-grant universities.
Right.
Which is our state land-grant university in Ohio?
Well, the big one is
it's in Ohio.
Yeah.
It's in the state. It's a university. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Well, we're about to raise some heck in the legislature because we got a hold of all the stuff they're doing, including doing a big training program last spring to train regional coordinators and facilitators, and they had a youth track on how to not only introduce, but how to push back against parents who would have opposition to mainlining transgender ideology into the 4-H program. Now, Chuck, when you think of 4-H, what do you think of?
Kids that are go out and raise a goat or a cow
Or a garden or something. Go to the fair.
Yeah.
Do service projects. Okay, and the 4-H's are head, hands, heart, and homosexuality, right?
No.
Health.
Yeah.
Health! Oh, gosh. So what do we mean? So basically what we're saying is we're going to pump into their heads transgender ideology. We're going to change their hearts in order to make them little acolytes of the LGBT movement. We're going to put their hands to work fighting their own parents and family members and everybody, anybody else, their church, against, you know, saying that homosexuality and its inherent, you know, problems is wrong. And then we're going to say, well, it's just as healthy and normal for you to engage in sodomy and illicit relations with the same sex as it is to, you know, find someone, marry, and you know, have a family. That's not what 4-H has ever been about. And,
no.
And the vast majority of families whose children are in or have been in 4-H don't even know this is coming. This was generated by the National 4-H and the California 4-H. Gee, think about it. In California, they put together this entire program of how to normalize and shove this into the 4-H programs, and Ohio State University picked up on it. As a matter of fact, you go to their website, there's an entire couple of pages on how to do this that we're funding through our tax dollars.
Yep.
Because guess what? The cooperative extension gets money from the state budget. What are we doing right now in Ohio? We're debating a new budget. Guess who's going to have a very bad day at the budget debates here very soon?
Let's hope so.
Well, honestly, I don't think it. Even the most hardcore leftist liberal Republican, I think, knows better than to stand up and say anything against prohibiting
the withdrawal
this garbage,
of the funds, yeah.
Prohibiting this garbage from being pushed on kids in a 4-H program. Okay, if they do. Well, God help you, because nobody else is going to, because I'll tell you what, even if you're in a somewhat urban district, you got families who are in 4-H. And
yeah.
You got families who are going to be like, you know what? This isn't what we signed our kids up for. And this isn't what we're spending all of our time, effort, and resources, you know, being part, being helpers, et cetera. But this is coming. And of course, the state director of 4-H basically said if there are parents who object to this trajectory they're going on, well, they really aren't. They really don't need to be part of our program. So, coming from the state director of 4-H, they're basically saying if you have traditional values, 4-H is no longer the place for you.
Yeah, how sad.
Well, that's the reason why Joe Biden. Thank you very much for that quote. That Donald Trump, 8 years in the White House, will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation. All I can say is, may it be so, Lord Jesus, because we need it, because the last 8 years is where we got all of this LGBT, transgender ideology, Title IX, bathroom issue, push it against the Boy Scouts, push it in the Girl Scouts, push it now in 4-H.
Well, and the Boy Scouts is basically feeling the Girl Scouts have been sort of corrupted for quite some time. The feminists took over the Girl Scouts many
back in the 70s.
Decades ago. The Boy Scouts managed to hold out until they essentially, as a slap in the face to God, a lot of churches stepped in and said, "No, you have to be involved in being inclusive with." Homosexuals and that kind of thing. So you couldn't exclude scoutmasters who were homosexuals.
Well, they're now feeling that pinch now, because I just saw an article that the Boy Scouts are about to have unveiled on them a list of, I think it's thousands of names of individuals who are going to be at least accused of, if not charged with, sexual crimes against the kids that they were scoutmasters or helpers of in the Boy Scouts.
Not really that shocking, but it is shocking at the same time. It's a sort of a schizophrenia that is a sign of the times we live in, that you're shocked, both shocked and not shocked at the same time. And I find myself there a lot. And I'm very pleased that there is a core of young people who are starting to get it, because they're seeing the schizophrenia, and I pray that God would continue to open their eyes. That being said, you know what we think, and we want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. You can listen to our archives there and do a search on some of the articles that we've done and that kind of thing. And we ask that you would join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.